Even with all the advances in smartphone features, one older technology has stood the test of time, texting.
The actual process has gotten easier over time. For example, you don't have to punch numbers repeatedly on a flip phone, but the basic concept has basically remained unchanged.
Texting is the single most used feature on smartphones, and it's widely used by people of all generations. And our next guest says it has a big impact on our relationships in and out of a pandemic.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think texting has made a positive impact on your relationship with a friend, a family member, or a partner? Do you like being able to share thoughts instantly? Would you prefer someone's full attention over a phone call instead? Do you think we text too much instead of using other forms of communication? We want to hear from you. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Catalina Toma is a professor in the Department of Communication Arts at UW-Madison. She's an expert on the social and psychological effects of communication technologies, including text messaging. Catalina, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So, Catalina, how do you think texting behaviors have changed over, say, the last 10 years?
I would say the biggest change in texting behavior has been its increase, sheer numbers. Texting has become tremendously popular in the maintenance of all sorts of relationships, from friendships to communication with family members to romantic relationships, and to some extent in our professional lives as well. So we're seeing a real surge in numbers in the use of texting, like you all mentioned in the beginning.
And why do you think we have seen such an increase in texting? It could be just as easy to dial a number and call someone over the phone. It might be faster to get the information you need. So why do you think texting has really exploded?
That's a really interesting question and a really interesting comparison with the phone or to face-to-face communication. When we do research on the topic, we like to think of the features and affordances of various media and how they change the communication patterns. And with texting, one really important feature is that it's not intrusive. You're able to communicate with people at low effort through just verbal means, right? You're just texting words, writing down words, without necessarily interrupting their current activities. And that's a big plus if you're trying to convey mundane information as you're going through life, as you're moving through your day. That's really important. Texting is also portable, right? It's done on smartphones that we carry with us at all times. So it's very easy to access. There's low barriers to access, and it's really low effort in composing those messages. So research, really fascinating research shows, for example, that people tend to resort to the phone, which used to be very popular decades ago, when they have big and usually negative important news to share. So we refer to this phenomenon as phone fears. People are worried when the phone rings because it's usually something bad, and that is correct. So we feel justified in interrupting people's days with a phone call when something important happens. But for more mundane, casual communication, texting feels a lot more polite, frankly.
Yeah, I feel like I'm probably not the only one that feels this way. But when my phone rings, I sometimes do feel annoyed. And so one of the things I'm also curious about is texting in the broader scope of communication is pretty new. But in terms of in technological communication, it's pretty standard at this point. I remember learning how to text on T9. So that was when you were pounding the numbers to get to the number to get to the letter that you wanted. And it seems like smartphones have made that easier. But how do say different generations approach texting, especially now with smartphones?
That's a really interesting question. And I'm an old user myself. So I remember times when I didn't have a cell phone and I didn't know how to text and I didn't even know how to type for that matter. So it's a really interesting time in history now because we have generations who have completely 100% grown up with these technologies, what we call the digital natives. And we have people like myself and older people who absolutely did not and had to learn it from scratch. So consistent with that, we are actually seeing differences in the pattern of adoption of these technologies and the amount of reliance people have on these technologies. And they're exactly what you would have expected, right? If you've grown up with it, you're going to use it a tremendous amount. We're seeing increased use with the older generations, but they're not near as frequent users of the technologies as the younger ones.
We are talking to Catalina Toma right now. She is a professor in the Department of Communication Arts at UW-Madison, and we're talking about how texting impacts relationships, especially during COVID-19, the pandemic, when people started relying a little bit more on these lifelines to reach out to friends, family, and texting was one way that people did it. So, you know, Catalina, you were saying a minute ago that texting is kind of the more mundane, more polite way that people might think about interrupting someone during their day. And, you know, texting is a tool of, communication, but it doesn't always have to be mundane. How can texting also be, you know, fun and playful?
Well, mundane actually includes fun and playful. So when we talk about mundane talk in relationship science, this is actually a tremendously important relationship maintenance strategy. So when we're maintaining our relationship, we don't just do the big things like having the talks or going on trips or doing important things together. Actually, the lifeline of relationships is everyday communication, the mundane talk, the everyday sharing that I was talking about earlier. And this can be fun and playful. Actually, positivity is one way to maintain relationships. Just sharing jokes or sharing something funny or interesting that has happened to you during the day. Providing little messages of assurances. This is really important in romantic relationships. The little I love you, the little I'm thinking about you. Those things are tremendously important. And we're seeing, as we might expect, a great amount of use of texting for mundane talk or everyday sharing. This being said, texting also happens for more important conversations. So one area of research that I'm fascinated by and that I wish there was more research available currently is the use of technologies for relationship conflict. You know, what happens when we resort to these technologies for engaging in conflict? And conflict can be really disruptive to a relationship or can be really important in the survival or growth of the relationship. And there is some evidence that people do use texting and other communication technologies for conflict, but it's not yet clear if it's a good thing or a bad thing. People perceive both advantages and disadvantages of these technologies.
So I want to take a caller right now. We have True in Madison who joins us to talk about how they use texting for their day-to-day lives.
Hey, this is True.
And what did you want to say, True?
I just wanted to, first of all, bring up, I use texting a lot, group texting, when I'm trying to make plans with my friends. I'm a 27-year-old. But sometimes it seems like group texts really, like, get the job done, and sometimes it seems like it almost irritates the people that are a part of it. And I was wondering if there's kind of any research for how to send the most effective group text.
Thanks for that call, True. What do you think? What's the most effective way to include a lot of people in one messaging system?
That's a really interesting point, True. Thank you for bringing up groups. There is some research showing that people are using groups increasingly with certain texting applications, and especially during COVID. They are great for efficiency, for sending the same message to a larger number of people and reaching them in this way. And they're great for mundane relationship maintenance. So think about the friends that we have and sending them memes or sending them jokes and having some of them respond and maybe some not, depending on their schedule and their availability. So for those things, group texting is great. But for what True talked about, coordination of actual activities, of meetings, it could be trickier. And a lot of it has to do with the size of the group. Obviously, the more people involved, the more difficult it will be to make plans. And because texting tends to be sequential and take a little bit longer than face-to-face communication, making those plans and achieving that coordination can be delayed with texting than having the discussion face-to-face. So it's a little bit less efficient in a situation of having more people, as I'm sure we've noticed personally.
And, you know, in that vein, you know, one of the things about group texts are some people don't respond, some people do. And that's one of the things that, depending on where you stand on this, texting can be nice. You can reply in your own time, but you also might leave someone hanging. Can you talk about maybe the pros and cons that you see in these real situations where there's a mismatch in expectation and actual texting back?
Sure. I think the biggest problem that is recorded by research with respect to texting concerns something that we call response latencies. This refers to the amount of time that it takes for us to get a response to our text. People have expectations about what's an acceptable response latency and what is not. And this is an area where people can get really upset and relationships can get very fraught. When we don't receive the responses in what we consider to be a good amount of time. So this is an area where we have to be mindful, not to leave partners hanging, to respond in a timely manner. There's this question of what is a good texter? What makes a good texter? And a big part of it is somebody who engages with you rapidly. And I think expectations for getting back to people immediately have increased over time. And a conversation that goes well over texting is a conversation that tends to be more synchronous than asynchronous.
We are picking up our conversation with Catalina Toma. She's a professor in the Department of Communication Arts at UW-Madison. And we're talking about the ways that text messaging impacts our relationships.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you look at texting as convenient, fun, annoying, a chore, a little bit of all of the above? How does texting affect your life? How do you use it in your relationships? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
Now, Catalina, before we went to break, one of the things that we were talking about was sometimes the mismatch between, you know, when people respond quickly and when people don't. And one thing that I've been thinking about is, you know, how texting and text-based communication can really set the stage for romantic relationships. A lot of people are meeting online via an app. And the first way you basically start courting, to use kind of an old-fashioned term, is through texting. Can you talk about how that plays a role in early and then more mature romance?
That's right. So texting is becoming really important in the initiation stage of relationships, concurrent with the popularity of online dating. So online dating is an absolute huge player in the world of romantic relationships these days. One study that came out in 2019 is showing that online dating has become the most popular way for people to start relationships these days, displacing meeting through friends, which used to be the most popular way before. So what happens on these sites is you get connected to potential partners or matches, and then you're able to start text-based communications with them. And that's the typical first contact that people have with a potential partner. Then there's variability in the amount of time that people spend texting and what it is that they text about. Some people prefer to meet face-to-face immediately. Other people tend to delay that initial meeting and spend more time texting. And one area of research here that I think is absolutely fascinating is this question of what's the ideal amount of time that you want to spend texting with somebody before meeting face to face? Or is there a non-ideal amount of time that you can spend online? And there's some research providing some answers. And the answer basically is that texting is good for connecting initially and for disclosing. But it is possible to text too much before meeting in person. About 7 days or so is when things become too much. If you spend more than that amount of time on average, again, these are all averages, texting with a potential romantic partner, what can happen is that you can develop an overly beautified and impressive version in your mind of your partner that departs from reality, such that when you eventually meet face to face, you're going to be disillusioned and disappointment, and that's going to get in the way of relationship development. And the reason that happens is because, well, when we text, we have more control over message composition. We can control what we say. We can edit what we say more carefully than if we had to meet in person in real time without the ability to take back undesirable things that we say. So people tend to engage in this selective self-presentation. They're really careful about what they say when they're interested in impressing somebody, as is the case with online dating. That's one phenomenon that happens here. The other is over-attribution, or the idea that when we have limited information about somebody, we tend to mentally fill in the blanks with information that makes sense to us. So if we're just seeing positive things, we're imagining that the person is even greater than maybe we would have thought face-to-face when we had more information. So the more time you spend online, the more you project, and the more likely you are to be a little bit disappointed when you eventually meet face-to-face.
That's really interesting to think of that early texting, that there is a limit. Otherwise, you could come across more clever in your texts. Your potential romantic partner could as well, and there could be some disappointment somewhere in between. I want to take a call really quickly. We have Lisa in Madison.
Hi,
Lisa. What do you want to say?
I was just. Earlier you had mentioned how when there's conflict in the relationship, how texting for my significant other and I, when we're having a lot of conflict and we're not communicating the best, sometimes texting gets our point across and we're able to communicate better than face-to-face. 'Cause when we text, you know, when we talk face-to-face, it can be an argument. When texting, it seems to be absorbed better for some reason.
So, Lisa, thank you for that call. And, you know, we did very briefly touch on conflict sometimes getting exacerbated by text, but it sounds like, Lisa, it gives maybe a little bit of a cooling off period. Are we seeing that at all with some conflict? Is it maybe the exception, or is it make it a little bit more nuanced?
I think Lisa is a very astute observer here. She makes some really fantastic points. There's been studies asking people what they think are the advantages of having a conflict over texting or communication technologies in general. And some of the things that Lisa mentioned come out really strongly. For instance, there's this idea of more careful message composition that I've already mentioned. So you can take as much time as you want to put down your thoughts. You can edit them to make sure that they're just right, that maybe they're not overly emotional, that maybe they're not hurtful to your partner, that you're communicating what it is that you want to communicate. That's a big advantage. Another advantage is reduced interruptions. In some people's communication dynamics, there's a lot of cutting off, and one partner isn't able to get their point across because the other keeps interrupting. Maybe one is more verbal and more skilled than the other, and the person who isn't so skilled can't quite get their point across, and that can be minimized through texting. Another advantage is reduced flooding. Flooding refers to the experience of being overwhelmed by emotion. Some people get very emotional during conflict. It's very aversive to them, or to us, I should say. It's really unpleasant. And we can become really emotional in a way that can be alleviated by texting because there's more distance with texting or technologies in general. So all of these are advantages that people mention when you ask them, what do you think is good about technology when engaging in conflict?
Do you think that there is any point in, I mean, to make the argument that, hey, maybe put down the texting, maybe put down the phone if you are engaged in conflict, even if maybe you are a little bit better on the typing things out front?
Yeah, that's such a great point. So I mentioned advantages. There's also perceived disadvantages. Some people do not like having conflict over texting. And here's some of the things that they say. One is the issue of waiting time or response latency that I've mentioned earlier. When you're engaged in a fraught discussion in a conflictual situation and you have to wait for your partner to respond, that can feel especially torturous because you're projecting all sorts of negative things in your mind, right? Why aren't they getting back to me? Am I not important enough? What's going on there? And people are not completely wrong about that. Research shows that people are more likely to purposefully delay responding over text than they are face-to-face. Other people feel an emotional disconnect with their partner when they're just texting about the conflict. They feel like the embodied self is really important for conveying emotion, you know, for maybe having a hug or a pat on the back or all of these displays of emotion, or just reading your partner's emotion from their face. So these folks really prefer face-to-face communication for that reason. Now, so you would wonder, what's more important? Is it the advantages or the disadvantages? There's been a couple of studies on this topic. In these studies, researchers bring participants to the lab and they manipulate the media through which they have conflict. So the participants are told to talk about a contentious issue in their relationship, and half of them do so face-to-face and the other half do so through texting or instant messenger, which are very similar, identical in this case. I will say that in these studies, research shows a net benefit for face-to-face communication. So people feel like they've resolved the conflict a little bit better. They feel more finality. They feel more positive emotions when they have dealt with the issue face-to-face. But again, these are just a couple of studies, and we need to do more comprehensive research about individual differences. Are there maybe some people who benefit from technology more than others? For some people who dislike technology more than other. We also need to do research on spontaneous conflicts, on naturally occurring conflicts rather than the ones that are prompted in the lab.
So we will absolutely need to have you back on to talk about that. Thank you so much, Catalina.
I would love to be back. Thank you.
Catalina Toma is professor in the Department of Communication Arts at UW-Madison. She joined us to talk about texting.